I'll see your 2 trillion and raise you a trillion. Wow, these numbers just don't even make sense. The HEROES Act being considered by the House this week would add $3 trillion to COVID relief and economic stimulus efforts. Included in the package would be some much-needed aid for agriculture, but its odds of passing the Senate seem to be, not too good.
Live from the only quarantine in American history imposed on healthy people via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Brian Jennings, the CEO of the American Coalition for Ethanol. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Greg Anderson and Chad Ingalls. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from AgPro Magazine offers an update. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis Michelson, it sounds to me like maybe you're over it.
Over it? No.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. I'm fine with it. I just want everyone to know where we're at. I mean, quarantine, really. The definition of quarantine is putting sick people someplace.
Yes.
So they can't make everybody else sick.
Right.
This is not a quarantine. I'm not sure what the word for it is yet. I checked my thesaurus, and there is no word for weird thing that they make you do.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It is crazy. We all did this. Yeah. Had spent some time thinking about it again last night and trying to figure out exactly where we are in this whole process. And this is part of the conversation that I want to have with Greg and with Chad today. Where are we in this whole process? Part of the reason for the shutdown and the slowdown and the stay at home was to make sure that the hospitals would not become overwhelmed with a surge in COVID-19 cases.
Mm-hmm.
Have we done that? Have we accomplished that? Is it time, maybe past time, to move on? More and more people are saying, yes, it is that time that we move on. So, yeah, that'll be a good topic of discussion for the Farmer Forum coming up here in just a little bit.
For sure.
Yep. Brian Jennings. I've been waiting to have Brian on for a while again. And,
I'm really looking
forward to having Brian from ACE, the American Coalition for Ethanol, on, especially with the provisions that are being proposed in the HEROES Act for biofuels. So good timing to have Brian on the show. All right, man, let's go ahead. Get to the news. What's going on?
Well, Chip, you did mention it, and this is a mouthful, but the House is set to vote on its next round of coronavirus relief. The summary alone for the $3 trillion aid package is 90 pages long, with the full text of the bill boasting 1,850 pages. The move is seen as positioning ahead of eventual talks with Senate Republicans who are wary of additional spending. Chip, the measure includes a laundry list of ag and energy-related gimmies, including another $16.5 billion in direct farm payments, plus aid for biofuels plants and dairy producers. Now, as widely expected, the package includes the much-pushed 15% increase in SNAP or food stamp benefits Democrats have been unable to get in prior relief bills. The HEROES Act would also authorize USDA to compensate livestock and poultry producers euthanizing hogs or destroying chickens that could not be processed. And finally, the bill also includes financial aid for domestic biofuel producers, as I said. The Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell called the measure, quote, aspirational, as GOP leaders discuss their own plans. And it does seem like those GOP leaders are thinking, let's just see how the other aid packages have gone and what we need to do. Let's give it some time, is what I'm hearing, Chip.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You heard that on Monday morning when Senator Grassley was on AgriTalk. That's exactly what he said. And not only did he say it once, he said it again and again. I think he got to it three times that, listen, we've stuck a lot of money into the system. Let's wait and see if we can get some velocity going behind that stimulus that is already out there. This is going to be a tough one for – this is going to be a tough conversation because, like you just said, there are some provisions in that HEROES Act that I think are very important for agriculture. Mm-hmm. The compensation for those that had to euthanize hogs, liquidate
sows.
That's
a big one. Yep.
Because of all of this. The support for the biofuels industry, I think that's important. But – if it's thrown in with everything else and a long laundry list of what, you know, what has been described as a partisan bill.
Yep.
This is going to be a tough conversation. Yeah.
Farmers and ranchers, listen up. USDA has set a webinar for Thursday, May 14. That's tomorrow, for farmers and ranchers and other producers interested in applying for direct payments through the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program. That's the CFAP. The session is to address the general application process and required documents participants will need to complete. National health expert Dr. Anthony Fauci warned in a Senate hearing yesterday there could be a wave of fresh COVID-19 infections in some states if schools and businesses are reopened too quickly. Also, while U.S. national parks and recreation areas are beginning to allow visitors back in, California, for example, says its state university system will conduct most classes in the fall online. Yeah. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell.
Real quick on the Fauci stuff. You know, number one, could be an outbreak if we open too quickly. Well, there's two qualifiers there. Okay, what if we open everything up right now and it doesn't happen? Then Fauci can say, well, I said there could be and there wasn't because we didn't open too quickly.
Right.
It's all just jumbled up stuff.
Let me finish with this. Some GOP senators are looking to sanction China for its role in the spread of the coronavirus. Senate Judiciary Chairman Lindsey Graham, along with other lawmakers, have introduced a bill to authorize the president to take punitive actions against China. This is China pushes back against similar rhetoric from Australia.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of Ag Professional. Margie, how are you?
Good morning, Chip.
Good. More changes in the seed industry. What's happening?
Yeah, Corteva Agriscience announced yesterday that they will be retiring the Micogen brand. Additionally, they're retiring Terrell seeds and Rev brands as well. But specific to Micogen, they are replacing that with a 100% retail-focused brand in Brevant. And this will focus on the Corn Belt as well as the Eastern Corn Belt in corn and soybean seed.
Okay, so it's a retail. It's available only at retail locations. And what kind of locations are we talking about there, Margie?
So, yeah, no, we're talking about folks who sell, you know, seed, fertilizer, and crop chemistry. And what they say will be really supportive of the business here is that about a third of seed is sold through independent agencies, a third is sold through ag retail, and a third is sold through farmer dealers. And specific to this ag retail channel, they have a structure put in place for just more effective planning as well as delivery and product support that they are bringing with Brevant seeds.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to admit, I don't know if I like seeing the Micogen name go. It's been around for so long, Margie.
They said that this is a continuation and a capstone, really, of what they started 2 years ago when they formed Corteva. And so far, the feedback from retailers has been a very warm welcome because that Micogen brand had been sold through farmer dealers, through retails, and it was a little muddled in that way. So Corteva really looking to go to market with a new offering specific to ag retail.
Very cool. Very cool.
And I should note, Pioneer is staying intact as well as their other regional brands.
Gotcha. Yeah, you can't know the players if you don't have a program, and Margie is constantly updating our program. Thank you.
Thanks, Chip.
All right, that's Margie Eckelkamp, editor of Ag Pro. We've got Brian Jennings, Ace, up next. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Hey, welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. And
yes, sir.
We need to talk some biofuel news here, buddy, and get some perspective on what's going on in the world of ethanol. And got a great guy to update us. We've got Brian Jennings. Brian is the CEO of the American Coalition for Ethanol, better known as ACE. He joins us right now. Brian, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Oh, thank you, Chip. Pleasure to join you.
Okay. One of the weirdest times that any of us have ever lived through, and the ethanol industry in particular is being challenged by the lost demand for fuel in this country, Brian. It's been a shock to the system, to say the least, for this ethanol industry, hasn't it?
Yeah, well said. I've had some hair pulling moments in my 15 years working in the ethanol industry. We thought 2019 was tough. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if we've had, you know, two black swan events, really, with the oil price war between the Saudis and the Russians, and then of course COVID and the dramatic downfall in demand that is precipitated. It's been tough. It's been hard on our industry. It's hard on our customers and the farmer shareholders and farmers needing to market. But I'm hoping we're going to be able to crawl back, claw out of this mess and get back on track.
Okay, let's talk about these two events individually here, because doggone it, it feels to me, Brian, like if all we would have, we would have had to deal with was the Russians and the Saudis doing battle over oil prices, over crude oil prices. I keep thinking that would have driven fuel prices down, consumption up, and that 10% blend would have gone right along with it. It might have actually helped us out in the ethanol industry.
No doubt about it. I'm smiling because I've thought the same thing so many times. Yeah. Low prices always results in an uptick in demand. People want to get out there and drive more when they see those low retail prices at those stations. That absolutely would have set us up for a pretty darn good year for ethanol demand. But of course, we had this other body blow. Yeah.
So let's bring in the COVID now, and all of a sudden we're not, workers aren't commuting in from the suburbs into the cities. We aren't doing as much traveling to see family, and the blow to the fuel consumption has more than overwhelmed any potential price or positive from the lower fuel prices, right?
That's right. More than overwhelmed it. It's not just the duration of the downturn, it's the magnitude. It was so sudden and so swift. It literally and figuratively pulled the rug out from under us. And that's why we saw so many plants shut down. They had to, even those that were, able to sort of economically sustain things were running out of places to store fuel because fuel simply wasn't moving. I think at one point, 95-96% of the United States population was in some sort of shelter in place or stay at home order during April or March and April.
Right. Yeah, this whole thing has just been, surreal and just you said it best, a body blow to the ethanol industry in here, Brian. Now that we are past the worst of the stay home orders on a state by state basis, we are starting to see, like you said, people want to get out there and drive, and our fuel use is going up, right?
Fuel use has picked up the last 2 weeks, according to EIA. So that's absolutely positive news. I want to believe the same thing you do, that the worst is behind us. I assume April, was sort of the low point for us, that third week of April, maybe last week of April. So, we're trying to claw back out of this.
And yep.
It's too early to predict a recovery, of course, but it's interesting how gasoline and ethanol demand are sort of shaping up to have a V-type recovery in the very short term, and we got to continue to monitor that data.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, how bad did it get for the industry, Brian? How much of it was shut down?
Well, the number of plants changes, you know, day to day, but we're talking half the industry. So if we produce 17 billion gallons, 8.6 billion gallons has been shut down. And that's a combination, of course, of total shutdowns and a significant number of plants that reduced output, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 is as much as 50%.
Oh, geez. Man, that's tough to take. And for these plants, one thing that many might not understand is that when you do shut a plant down, you've got the startup costs all over again, right?
You've got startup costs all over again. Of course, it depends on how you shut that plant down. And a lot of these operators were, you know, keeping as many people on staff as they can, keeping the fermenters going to the extent that they could. So when it comes time to try and start back up, it's a 1 to 2 week process as opposed to a 3 to 4 week process. And so I think a lot of the producers try to keep, you know, some semblance of staff on board so they were ready to ramp back up.
Gotcha. Okay. Ramping back up, that cost that's going to be there, and because they haven't had the revenue coming in, they need to get some feedstock in place. I think that's part of the idea behind the proposal in the HEROES Act in the House with the biofuel support there, right, Brian?
Yeah, I think so as well. I might have written the payment mechanism slightly differently. We were talking about some CCC reimbursement in the third stimulus bill that would have made retroactive payments for corn purchases from January 1 through like the end of March. But I'm not going to criticize this program because, hey, this is the first time Congress has thought to include direct aid for renewable fuel producers in a stimulus bill. We've seen one, two, three phases of stimulus, trillions of dollars passed without even a thought to the renewable fuel producers. So I'm pleased the House is looking at this right now.
Yeah, I am too, Brian. But what concerns me is that the bill is loaded down with a lot of partisan. It's a partisan wish list in a lot of this bill, which is going to lower the odds. It's going to have to be aid for the ethanol industry for the biofuels at some point is going to have to be broken out of this, isn't it?
Well, we've always depended upon bipartisan support. And so I think you're going to see some gamesmanship. I'm a former Senate staffer. I know how this game is played. You're going to see a Democratic version of the fourth stimulus bill, and we're going to see a Republican version of it. Those will both likely go down, and then we're going to see some of the best ideas, I think, develop into a compromise. Let's hope common sense prevails with our friends in Congress on this fourth package. And I think we're going to see something in there. I want to be optimistic, Chip, that we're going to see something in there for renewable fuel producers.
Okay, very good. And in the midst of all of this, Brian, you've got five governors from across the country. I'm not even sure what states they represent that are asking for waivers from the RFS. They don't understand how it works, right?
Well, they don't. I mean, this drives me crazy. Of course, the RFS is actually translated into a percentage standard. So as we've seen gasoline use fall from, 140-some billion gallons to probably 120-some billion gallons this year, ethanol blending is going to decline proportionally.
Right.
So that's, I guess, the first point. But it's so disingenuous what they're asking for. And these five governors provided zero evidence to make the case that ethanol blending and the RFS would be the cause of harm. This goes back to that 2012 precedent, Chip, when we had that terrible drought year. We had a bunch of governors whine and complain about the RFS. They similarly asked for a waiver of the RFS, and EPA appropriately said the pain and suffering this year is because of the drought. This year, it's, of course, because of the oil price war, and COVID. That's hurting refiners as much as it's hurting renewable fuel producers. So this isn't going to go anywhere.
Yep, gotcha. Yeah, and then the oil industry's response, you know, saying that if you hold us to that 15 billion gallons, well, but like you said, it's a it moves with total use, but they're trying to argue that it's going to turn into imports of ethanol, which is ridiculous. Brian, we need to do this more often. Thank you so much for your time.
Very good. Thank you.
You bet. We've got the Farm Reform coming up next. Greg and Chad.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, it's the day after the USDA reports. Pretty muted reaction yesterday. Are we seeing some hangover to those numbers coming into the markets today, though?
Yeah, I think we are, Chip. We're seeing especially heavy selling pressure in the wheat and soybean markets today. You know, when we look back at the reports, the wheat numbers, winter wheat production was slightly higher than expected, not enough to have a huge negative right. response there. But ending stocks were also bigger than expected, global ending stocks up. And as a result, you know, I think that that market, along with the improved weather we've seen in the Black Sea region the past week or so, we're seeing that pull back. You know, the soybean data yesterday, I wouldn't call it friendly by any means, especially the old crop ending stocks rising more than expected, and that's putting some pressure on the market. Both of those markets are trading below yesterday's lows, and we kind of got some technical selling as we dropped below them.
Yeah, yeah. And the market has done a nice job of absorbing that 3.31 billion bushel corn carryover projection for next year.
Yeah, all things considered, I think that the corn market, it's lower today, but a large part of that is based on spillover from the wheat and soybean markets. Corn is holding in relatively well and still trading above yesterday's lows. So like you said, it's handling that huge new crop carryover estimate really, really well at this point in time.
Okay, negative numbers in livestock.
Yeah, cattle market you know, tried to push above Tuesday's highs, but ran out of buyer interest, and now we're pulling back. Sharp losses in those contracts. Also seeing sharp losses in hog futures today, just on some additional pullback from the earlier month highs.
Thank you, Brian.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Jeez, is the Teenage Davis picking the bump music again? What's going on?
Yes. Pop. You want me to sing it, or should we play the recording again? I mean, which do you prefer?
We're okay.
Pick
we're
your poison,
okay.
brother.
We're good to go. We're good to go. All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Let's get this farmer forum going. We've got Chad Ingles from Northeast Iowa. He joins us right now. Chad, it's good to talk with you. How are things going this morning?
Hey, things are going pretty good. Good to talk to you, Chip.
Good. You got chores done? The pig's doing okay?
Yep, chores are done. Had to make a little run to town to finish up feeding the baby calves this morning because Dad wasn't on top of things, but got that all taken care of.
I'm sure you've got a boss or two that you need to answer to on taking care of those calves, don't you?
Oh, yeah. He doesn't always want to be out there helping, but wants to instruct. So.
Love it, love it, love it. Greg Anderson over in Eastern Nebraska. Greg, thank you for making time for us this morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Chip. Great to be with you this morning.
Good. We're going to talk planting progress and crop conditions and everything here in just a little bit. But first, Greg, I think people know that Greg is very involved in the biofuels industry, member of the National Biodiesel Board. What'd you make of those comments from Brian? Greg, he did a great job of explaining and putting it on the table that the just had the rug pulled right out from under it, didn't it?
Yeah, Brian did a great job in explaining that. And the biodiesel industry did absolutely suffer from all of this as well. A little bit different to the aspect of whereas the ethanol industry, for one, they had the gasoline demand drop right off the cliff. People were not driving to work. They were working at home, or they weren't working, period. And at the same time, as Brian talked about, the world oil market dispute between Russia and Saudi Arabia, both of those things were two black swans that had a drastic effect on ethanol. As far as diesel and biodiesel, you know, biodiesel continues to power the movement of goods and products from coast to coast with the trucking. And then during the planting season, that's a heavy usage time for biodiesel blends. I was reading a soundbite or a bullet from the Energy Information Administration, and it projected that U.S. fuel consumption for the year will be reduced by almost 10% for gasoline, about 5% for diesel. So, yeah, definitely impacting both industries.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And Chad, I mean, the impact of what has happened to the ethanol industry has come right down and smacked us all in the face in ethanol country, hasn't it, by way of the impact on basis?
Oh, no kidding. I sold a little bit of corn about 2 weeks before the shutdown, and we're down about a dollar cash price here locally since then. So it hurts.
Oh. Yeah, there is no question that it hurts, and we saw such good basis for such a long period of time, and ethanol was a big part of that to see it disappear like it has been I'm going to go back to use a phrase that Brian used. It's been a body blow to farmers and corn producers. All right, Chad, I don't know, dude, this spring has been pretty phenomenal, hasn't it?
It has been pretty spectacular. We're about 95% done planting. We just opening up my last 40 acres here. We did a little bit of tiling, and I just a couple minutes ago drove through a piece that I haven't been through in 2 years. So that's kind of nice. Jeez. But we started planting beans this year 6 weeks before we did a year ago. So pretty phenomenal.
Holy smokes. Holy smokes. So did you, I'm sure, I shouldn't even say did you, tell us about your cover crop experience this year so far, Chad.
Oh, it's been, I got a good stand out there. It didn't get as big before we started planting necessarily as what we maybe like to see. But this last field I'm in, the cover crop's probably 18 inches tall, and I'm planting into it green, and we'll terminate it here in a couple of days, and it'll work really well.
Okay, so let's hear some of it. Why are you doing this? Because you're one of the leaders, not only in the state, or not only in the district, but in the state and in the Midwest on cover crop use. Why are you doing it?
Well, I think the number one reason is soil erosion, but right behind it is trying to reduce our nutrient loss. Keep those nitrogen, especially in the field. It helps keep phosphorus in the field too, because we're recycling it and having less erosion. Those would be the two big things. And I think long-term soil health, the longer we can keep something living during the season out there in the field, the better chance we have to build organic matter over time rather than burn it up.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Greg, what's your situation over there? You're not far behind, are you?
No, in fact, I finished planting myself yesterday.
Wow.
I would guess that there's probably 90% plus planted all around me, and you know, within 100 miles all around me. It went in a great shape. We had really good weather throughout the last part of April. People got in early. You know, they had talked about rains and so forth. Those rains really didn't fall much. I've only had 3/4 of an inch of rain over the last 30 days. So if I could dial up the script for a good start here, we had a great start for getting the planting in, and the conditions were great. However, it's been very, very dry and very, very cool, and unusually cool. So, I mean, we're talking high temperatures, 15 to 20 degrees below normal for this time of year, and the lows about the same. In fact, we just dodged that freeze here the last weekend, early this week. That would have probably killed off some early emerged soybeans.
Wow. Wow. We didn't dodge this freeze, did we, Chad? It got there.
Yeah, we can drive around the country and see some brown corn, and not a lot of beans were up yet locally here, but I know some got nipped pretty good.
Yeah, no doubt. And what Greg was saying about the moisture, I know we're supposed to get some rain coming in here tonight, late this afternoon tonight into northeast Iowa, Chad, but we're going to use it. I mean, we can use the rain right now.
Yeah, we've had, he talks about 3/4 of an inch. We've had less than that in the last 30 days, and we pretty much did all our planning without any break, which is nice in one way, but it got awful tiring.
Right. Okay, I mentioned when we started the forum, I asked Chad if he got the pig chores done, but I hate calling it niche. It's more specialty pork production is what Chad is involved in. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so it's with a group called Nyman Ranch, and they call it the natural production, I guess. No antibiotics. Pigs are raised outdoors or in deep-bedded pens. A lot of what they do goes to restaurants, so it was impacted significantly on that end. But they also do a fair amount of direct sales and work with some online companies. And we got notice that online sales and grocery store sales have pretty much made up for what they lost at the restaurant business. And
That's crazy. They're
actually seeking more producers because they're going to have demand when the restaurant opens up.
People have heard me talk about this, Chad, because when we do get the rest, because consumers are finding alternative ways to get the protein that they want, when the restaurants reopen, there's going to be increased competition for the available supplies when it comes. And Nyman Ranch is a great example of that. I mean, it's the supply is going to be hard to come by for some of those restaurants and food service, right?
Oh, I think so. And it's going to put you're going to see higher prices in the restaurants along with higher prices in the grocery stores for a while until things catch up, I think.
Yep. Greg, we've been talking a lot about the impact of the reduced slaughter capacity that it's had on the state of Iowa, but Nebraska is right there with us in the total impact, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, Nebraska is a huge livestock state. We've got several meatpacking plants here in the state. And I was just thinking back on biodiesel a bit, biodiesel, our industry uses a wide variety of feedstocks, soybean oil being the greatest, but about 40% of our feedstocks come from recycled fats, oils, and greases.
Oh, sure.
And we've been hit three ways that way. For one, cooking oil supplies, recycled cooking oil has been reduced because nationwide the restaurant traffic fell off. And then you get to the livestock processing industry, as you said, that's another key biodiesel feedstock, and the challenges that they're facing right now have certainly a ripple effect both now and in the future. And then also with the ethanol, with the first half of the program, as Brian was talking about, the biodiesel industry uses a good amount of distillers' corn oil.
Yep.
And so that's another biodiesel feedstock that has been suffering because of all this turmoil.
Yeah, craziness. Lots of efforts to keep these packing plants up and running, Chad. Boy, here in the state of Iowa, it's in the news every day. It feels like a we need to do this, and we need to make sure that we've got a reliable supply of pork, a reliable supply of beef, of poultry, of everything out there to make sure that we're keeping this country fed. And that means we've got to make the workers comfortable with going back into those slaughterhouses and getting to work. Okay, we've got a Farmer Forum going with Greg from Nebraska, Chad from Iowa. We'll be back with more AgriTalk in a moment.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on. For our family and yours.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and the Farmer Forum, which is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. ACAM is it's a national partnership that is designed to help all U.S. farmers more rapidly scale the adoption of conservation agriculture and its economic and environmental benefits to farmers and their communities. The foundation partners include Trust in Food, the Farm Journal Foundation, USDA's NRCS, American Farmland Trust, Corteva, Ducks Unlimited, NCGA, the National Pork Board, Sanderson Farms, Syngenta, the Nature Conservancy, and Valent. Thank you so much to those sponsors of the Farmer Forum. We've got Chad Ingles from Northeast Iowa, Greg Anderson there in Eastern Nebraska. Greg, we were talking at the end of the last segment about some of the slaughterhouse issues, and Nebraska has had their share of it, and some real interesting news coming out of Madison there, right?
Yes, Chip. Yesterday, Tyson and Elkhorn Logan Valley Public Health Department announced the results of facility-wide testing for COVID-19 at the Tyson's plant there in Madison. That's only 20 miles from where I live. I understand limited production resumed on Monday. They had a temporary halt for deep cleaning and sanitization, but about 1,500 people work there, about 1,467 team members and contractors who work there were tested. 212 tested positive, and of those tested, what I really find alarming throughout this whole nation, of those 212 positive tests, 74 individuals did not show any symptoms. And they would not have been identified without the testing. So with the asymptomatic thing, I've heard between 20 and 40% of those carrying the virus are asymptomatic, and this is about 35%, so that falls right in line there. So that's what's really crazy about this virus. I mean, people can be absolutely, I mean, you know, we hear, take your temperature. If you're not feeling good, stay home. Yeah, I get that. Right. Absolutely agree with it. But yet you can have it, not even know you have it, spread it to somebody else, and about 35% of those people are that condition.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, the younger amongst us are less likely to feel the symptoms, recognize the symptoms, and they have also been the least likely to respect the social distancing. So in some of the areas, it has spread that way. Chad, we're trying to get back to work. Does it feel right? Does now feel right?
I think now is probably as good a time as ever. We've definitely got to start opening things back up here in Iowa. And as most of the harshest restrictions have been lifted in about 3/4 of the counties. I live in a county that we're still have the most restrictions left on. And it gets frustrating on a personal level. But like Greg says, we need to continue to practice safe social distancing and everything, but I think there are a lot of things that we can be careful and get back to work and have a more conscientious thought of what we're doing than we did before and be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that has really bubbled up through all of this, and it was happening even before some of the disruptions at the slaughterhouses, is the relationship or the tension between cattlemen and the packing industry. And there's a new push out there to figure out what should change in the cattle market. And on Monday, guys, Senator Grassley announced that he would be bringing some legislation promoting a 50% negotiated cattle market with those cattle getting to market within 14 days. Greg, I've heard the 30-14, but this is a 50-14 push. This is pretty aggressive move.
Very aggressive move, Chip. I heard it first on AgriTalk on Monday when you interviewed the senator. I like it. You know, this would mandate that each U.S. meat processing facility that slaughters over 125,000 head of cattle each year would purchase 50% of their weekly volume on the open or spot market, with a 14-day delivery period. What I think that would do would be to increase transparency. You know, let's face it, the market consolidation that has gone on in the livestock industry these past years has made it really, really tough go for producers. Yep. And I think this would give producers and feeders more flexibility certainly more transparency when they bring their livestock to market. I agree with the U.S. Cattlemen's Association. They put out a statement that said the lack of cash negotiated sales in recent years has decimated price discovery and undercut the fundamentals of the CME futures contracts. I think that's spot on. And I think what this legislation will do, if it's passed, is to advance price discovery, and it would shore up the fundamentals of those futures contracts. I just hope that when the legislation is written, that it's sound and tight enough so that there's no loopholes where folks could get around it.
Yep, absolutely. And the other thing that it would do is it'd give the feed yards some negotiating power. I mean, right now it feels like more of a price taker's system than a negotiated market. There's no question about that. So we need to get back to it. Chad, you're taking on a new effort again, running for the state house. What made you make that decision?
I don't know if it's a little crazy or what, but a weak moment when I got asked about it, maybe. Yeah, we're excited. It's been a little strange here with the lockdown. We'd normally be getting out and meeting a lot of people and kind of talking about what we're doing. I've been on the local school board for over 20 years, and so education's important. Water quality's important. And before the lockdown, those were two probably the biggest issues in Iowa. I think it's going to be a little different. I've told people maybe it's a job I don't know if I want now, but...
Interesting. Hey, your video that you posted on Twitter the other day about absentee ballots, that was excellent. Send the message.
Yep, I think it's going to be really important this year in primaries and probably even the general election that we do a lot of absentee balloting from home, keep those poll workers safe, and still have a say in what our government's going to do.
You guys are the best. That was... Thank you so much for your time this morning. Be safe this spring. Be safe this summer. We'll talk with you again real soon. That's Greg Anderson out in Nebraska, Chad Ingles in Northeast Iowa. Great job, you guys. All right, thanks for listening this morning. You got to come back this afternoon. We've got Sean Hackett from Hackett Financial Services. And tomorrow morning, Kevin Ross, president, National Corn Growers Association, right here on AgriTalk.